shall never relinquish my sword for a ring.
Hello and welcome to episode 99 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Hahn.
Hello, everybody.
Hi.
So we are back after a couple of weeks off, thanks to travel schedules, festivals, all that fun stuff. And we are talking about the new releases of the week, which are Pride and Prejudice and Zombies and Hail Caesar. So first up, we're going to review Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. PPZ. Just call PPZ. Done. Here is the IMDb synopsis. Jane Austen's classic tale of the tangled relationships between lovers from different social classes in 19th century England is faced with a new challenge, an army of undead zombies. There's better synopses out there, but that one's fine. So that's basically what the movie is. Seth Graham Smith wrote a book where he essentially took the original Pride and Prejudice and then just put zombies in it. And I've read the book and I love it. I think he did it in a way where it kind of... like, enhances the, not necessarily enhances the material, like, makes Pride and Prejudice better, but it, like, sheds new light on their situations in ways.
I agree. Like, the original book, one thing that I really liked about it was that people who knew the story really well, it was kind of, like, it tweaked it in just a way where it made it, like, a little more vicious, a little meaner. And it's, like, if you love Pride and Prejudice and hate Mr. Collins with a fiery passion, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, the book... gave you a really great, like, comeuppance for him. So that was kind of where, I didn't think the book was well written, but I thought it was well conceived. It was a really neat idea with, like, sixth grade level writing, so I wasn't sure what to expect from the movie.
The writing might not be the greatest, but the ways that he figured out how to weave the zombie apocalypse into what they were going through in the original version is actually insanely clever.
Yeah.
But sadly, the movie kind of cuts out a lot of the
really clever ideas.
And
the second
it kind
half
of just keeps like the bare bone concept of Pride and Prejudice plus zombies, which is not half as interesting as the source material.
Yeah, like, they chucked the second half of the source material and made up something completely different, which is, one, the way they present it, where basically they want to raise the stakes so it's not just that there are zombies, but there are smarter zombies that are, like, hellbent on a worldwide apocalypse.
Well, that's one of the most interesting things that we should probably explain, is that the zombies in this zombie outbreak, they're able to kind of suppress it as long as they don't eat human brains and retain some of their personality, which makes them insanely more interesting than, you know, the typical shambling Walking Dead type zombies that we see over and over and over again.
Except that that doesn't matter. Like, there's nowhere to put that in the story. Like, Pride and Prejudice is already a very intensive story.
But there
that, like,
is. There was. They took out
none.
Those parts. Yeah.
No, that's the thing. Okay, wait. But the thing is, in the original book, they were zombies, but they weren't, like, super heat. Like, they didn't have this ability to, like, fucking come... I don't know. They've built up this, like, zombie infrastructure in the movie that we don't have room for and is not nearly as exciting. And I just... I'm really shocked that they spent so much time creating this bullshit, nonsensical, let's set up for a franchise no one wants, instead of giving us interesting action scenes and good Austin comedy. Like,
well,
this movie
I'm not
is...
saying that, like, what you just explained right there, that's, like, the shit part of the movie. The idea that I like with the zombies is just what that does to a person who has to then kill a zombie. Because in the book, it plays around with, like, what if you knew this person and you knew they were infected and they were still themselves, but, like, you had no choice but to kill them.
Sure.
That's not what they're doing in the movie at all. What they're doing is exactly what you said, which is insanely absurd and doesn't make any sense.
I feel like you guys are talking a lot about the book. So as someone who hasn't read the book, I can't weigh in on that. And I do think that we should talk a little bit about just not just comparing to the book, but just as a movie.
No,
and I feel
let's
like...
just talk about comparing to the book.
Shut up, Angie. No, but
well,
Angie
just,
makes
I
a good point.
So, like, because I haven't read it.
What my big problem, though, is regardless of whether or not you read the book, when you hear the title Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies, I feel like what you expect is for it to be a bonker comedy. Because why else would you pick Jane Austen and put zombies in if you weren't trying to be funny? And this movie treats itself so seriously. It's infuriating.
I feel like you could take this premise in a couple of different ways. Like, I don't think it's inconceivable that you could do a movie that has Jane Austen and then adds a sort of, like, you know, horror or supernatural element to kind of elevate what the themes of the original book are. I think that the other way you could have gone was, like, doing, like, a Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters thing where you're just like, we're just gonna be crazy and bonkers and goofy.
That's what I wanted.
But I don't like the way they did it, which seems like, I think the way that I've been describing this to people is it's a not very good Jane Austen an adaptation that is periodically interrupted by an even worse zombie movie. It just seems like two, like, very, like, third-rate like movies smashed together. And it also kind of, the most bizarre thing to me was that it seems like whoever made this movie doesn't like Pride and Prejudice, because so much of, you know, what'll happen a lot of times in the movie is that, you know, it'll be like the Pride and Prejudice part of the plot will be ambling along, and then two characters will have an intense conversation, and then you can kind of just see the filmmakers thinking, oh, but like people are gonna get so bored if you just have two people like talking about how they like each other, so we gotta throw some zombies in there to make it exciting and sexy. And it just kept feeling like it almost felt like this movie was like, you know, guys, no, seriously, we promise we're not really a Jane Austen adaptation. And it's fine, like, I get that Jane Austen is not for everyone and that some people don't like that kind of movie, that's fine, but it's just like, then what was the fucking point?
Well, I can understand
adapting Jane Austen if you're just going to spend the whole runtime, like, you know, rushing to reassure people this isn't really a Jane Austen adaptation.
It feels like it's
What choice did they have? I mean, that's why
they
it's like
not made a Jane Austen adaptation.
Well, I feel like this was almost like a lose-lose with like the smallest chance of succeeding with this whole mashup idea. And I feel like I think I got an email once from Sony that's like, don't call it a mashup. Clearly, I failed. But
it is a mashup. What the fuck do they want you to call it?
I don't know. But like, but anyway, I feel like there was just such a small chance of them merging the two elements together in a way that would work for everybody that, I don't know, I give them credit for trying. And I didn't get the sense that, like, they weren't fans of Pride and Prejudice. I mean, in fact, I kind of got the opposite, like, that they were trying too hard to make Pride and Prejudice and didn't give the zombie stuff enough attention.
Oh, okay, that's so funny. I felt like they just didn't understand Pride and Prejudice at all, because, like, the thing is, what's really mind-blowing to me is that they cast Matt Smith, who a lot of us know from Doctor Who and who I love from Doctor Who, and put him as Mr. Collins, who is supposed to be a creeper character, and while he is socially awkward and funny, he's kind of the most charismatic character, which is a major fucking problem.
No, I don't think he's the most charismatic character. I just think that he seems like he came in from a better version of this movie. Like, I can see him working as the character, playing it almost exactly the same way in a version of Pride and Prejudice that's actually good. The
well,
reason
that's
he comes
like
across
taking
as the most charismatic
the
character
Gretel Witch Hunter's
is because
direction.
He's acting like several levels above everyone else. Everyone else kind of seems to be zombie shuffling through this movie.
Yeah.
That was very clever of me, I thought.
Yeah.
But,
well,
I
that
mean,
was
I'm
that
going
was
back
what
to
that they
what,
that's what they intended to do. Like, back during the set visit, I can't even begin to tell you how many times it was like, yeah, we're focusing on Pride and Prejudice and then going to infuse the zombies kind of in the background. Not necessarily in the background, but it's like Pride and Prejudice came first and then Zombie Apocalypse
but
came
like,
second.
Right,
and they
like,
were very proud of that take on it.
Well, going back to what you said, you were like, oh, you know, it would be hard for them to come up with a way to do these, like, to put these movies together in a way that pleases everyone. And I get that. But what I don't understand is, like, who is this movie for? Like, our Austen fans aren't going to like it because it's not a very good Austen movie. Zombie fans aren't going to like it because I don't think it's a very good zombie movie. As you guys pointed out, they have this really extensive zombie backstory that goes nowhere. The zombies themselves aren't interesting. They don't even play up the interesting themes. You know, like, there are themes that you see over and over in zombie movies that, when explored well, are really interesting. They don't play into any of those.
Yeah.
Like, I don't,
and the gore's not good because it's
PG-13. I can't imagine who wants to see this movie. The only thing this movie has going for it is the novelty of, like, isn't it funny if we put these two things together? And that probably felt a lot fresher, like, 8 years ago when they started trying to make this movie.
I definitely think it spread itself a little thin in terms of going for Jane Austen fans and zombie fans, and I feel like it's probably going to end up landing in, like, you know, the teen, like,
here's
I want to get
problem.
My gore fix zone.
I feel
but...
like they didn't know who their audience was. I feel like they didn't trust that Jane Austen fans could also be fans of zombie movies, which, hello, I'm not saying we're a huge group, but there's a Venn diagram there. So instead it feels like they were trying to appease Jane Austen fans and appease zombie fans without any kind of in-between. And it fails in both respects. Like, it feels like you're literally channel surfing between two different movies where it's like, I imagine a boyfriend and girlfriend sitting on a couch and being like, oh, look, it's romance. And he's like, oh, fuck this, carnage. But it's like, if you do that, it doesn't make for a cohesive story. It makes for a goddamn mess where neither person is satisfied. And the casting in this is just... it's such a waste. Like, Lily James is great in Cinderella. She has virtually nothing to do in this. The guy who plays Darcy, who I'm going to have to look, Sam Riley, boring, not interesting, not sexy.
Don't.
No. He is the worst Darcy I've ever seen.
I think his voice is, like, the sexiest thing ever. I could watch him do just about anything.
You like that voice? He does this weird rumbly old man voice the whole movie that I found distracting because I was like, why does Darcy sound like he's 60 even though he looks like he's like 28? I don't understand.
I was like completely charmed by him. And like I said to you, like all like Douglas Booth could just like stand in a movie, not say anything, not do anything. He could just grin at the camera and
Douglas Booth of Jupiter Ascending fame.
Oh my God.
That might have been my favorite part
of Jupiter Ascending.
He is Bingley, but again, there's nothing to do there. Wickham looks like way too old to be in this movie. Well, he looks like he could be everybody's dad.
The part that bothered me most about Wickham was just the fact that his agenda made no sense,
no sense at all.
Like, there is actually, like, just a huge error there that I don't understand why some sort of screenwriter, producer, anyone could have said, you know, we need even like a line here to explain this.
I guarantee you they rewrote on the set. This is like, it makes so no sense. And it's like, if you follow the production history on what a shit show this was to actually get made, like, no wonder this movie is atrocious. Like, this is kind of like when we all thought that World War Z was going to be garbage because of all the problems they had actually getting it made. And they were like, oh, this is good. This is the opposite end where you're like, oh, I hope this turns out good. And it's like, no, this and Jane Got a Gun had terrible productions that they couldn't get going. Oh, both produced by Natalie Portman. She should just stop producing.
Having a bad month.
Okay. Before we wrap up on this, I'm going to take a step back here, and I will agree with everything everybody said. I think this is a poorly made movie in many, many respects, like, and in inexcusable ways. But this
but you
to
had
me
fun with it?
Wound. This to me fell in like, you know, a guilty pleasure type category where I guarantee you it's on TV or when I have a DVD. I will probably watch this quite a bit. As many problems as I had with the end result while watching it, I was having some fun.
I mean, I was bored. I feel like guilty pleasure is kind of what I wanted from this movie. Yeah. Like something that's cheesy and very silly and very dumb, but fun. And to me, it just wasn't that fun. Like,
yeah, I liked Matt Smith. I think Lena Headey's really fun, but she's only in it for like 3 minutes. And she doesn't even get a fight scene. That's insane.
Yeah.
It's such a waste.
Well, this is like a shitty movie that I had fun with. So, I mean, honestly, if someone that I knew wanted to see it again, wanted to see it in theaters this weekend and asked if I wanted to go with them, I'd probably say yes.
I would judge that person. Yeah. I mean, if you're waiting for one of us to be like, we'll go with you, Perry, I don't think you have any takers on this podcast.
I'm not fishing for it, but if it happened to have popped
up, I wouldn't
argue.
Well, let's move on
to
this weekend's other big release.
Yeah, so a movie I did have fun with. I guess that's it's not a good segue, but whatever. Hail Caesar, the new movie by the Coen brothers. And here is a synopsis. A Hollywood fixer in the 1950s works to keep the studio stars in line. That is accurate, but it's really just a tip of the iceberg. So the fixer is played by Josh Brolin. He plays Eddie Mannix, who is based on a real person that worked for MGM back in the, you know, golden age of Hollywood. And it just follows him through the course of a day where he has lots of problems, like, you know, one of his, like, a starlet who is unmarried is pregnant. You know, there's a Western star that they're trying to reform his star image, and it's not really working. But his biggest problem is that the studio's biggest star, played by George Clooney, has been kidnapped by a strange group known as the Future. So it's really weird, and it just sets the stage for you to just go in and weave in and out of the golden age of Hollywood and like kind of see all these productions being made and kind of see like the inner workings of how star images were created and how, you know, like the interplay between studios and gossip columnists in creating these star images. It's really interesting, and there are some really great standout moments. Overall, though, I felt like from moment to moment, I loved this movie, but then when I stepped back, I couldn't quite figure out what the sum of the parts was and how much there really was to it. But I will say that in my personal experience, I don't think that this applies to everyone, but in my personal experience, I almost always like Coen Brothers movies better the second or third time I see them, so I'm willing to concede that maybe there were some things that I just wasn't picking up on. The parts that worked the best for me were the parts where you just kind of there are some really, but I will say that despite not loving the thing as a whole, or at least not yet, there were parts of it that I flat out loved that I think will actually go down as some of my favorite moments in the movies this year. There's like a Channing Tatum has this really long, like Anchors Away / On the Town inspired dance number that just like you've seen snippets of it in trailer and you think, okay, it's going to be like a brief thing, but they actually give you like the whole number. And it's amazing. There's something like that with Scarlett Johansson where she plays like a synchronized swimmer, water dancer person. And Alden Ehrenreich, you guys. That guy. Oh my God, I want him to be the next big thing. I love
him. A beautiful creature's fame.
Yeah, really.
Oh, he seems like he should. He seems like a person.
You know what?
That
he was actually one of the best parts about that movie, though. He had like that really
okay,
cute
but that's like
charm.
Saying that Skittles plopped on top of a turd or like the best part of a turd. Like, good for them. You still don't want them.
What the fuck?
I would like to know what happened in Chrissy's life that Skittles popped on top of a turd was like something
I
that came to mind
so I kind of
to
make
readily.
An emoji of that or something.
I don't even like Skittles. I don't know what that was. Anyway, but like
no, thank you for ruining Skittles for me.
But like I agree that like I liked parts of this movie a great deal. The Channing Tatum dance number is amazing. Scarlett Johansson, though she's only in it a little bit, is very funny. Tilda Swinton pops by to be really fun.
I feel like they're in it only a little, but they're really good applies to most of the cast.
Yeah, and that's actually kind of what bummed me out is that there's these like really great scenes that remind me a lot of one of my favorite movies, Singing in the Rain, where it's satirizing kind of the insanity of Hollywood and how movies get made, where it's like you see all the incredible wonder of how of like what they look like finished, and then like, you know, you see the water ballet, and then you see Scarlett Johansson like saying she wants to get her fish ass off because she wants out of the mermaid tail costume, and like that stuff all played really beautifully to me and was very funny. And like there's a lot of nods to actual old school Hollywood movies and also old school Hollywood scandals that if like me you really have a fondness for that era, it's fun to watch and kind of in your little movie nerd brain be like, check, I get that reference, and it's kind of a fun game. But cohesively, it's a movie about the Coens making a movie about why they make movies. And I have a feeling, like a lot of our critic friends really love this, and I don't think it's nearly as cohesive as a lot of our friends and colleagues do. I think that it requires the audience to do a lot of heavy lifting. And I think that people are drawing a lot of comparisons to Eddie Mannix being a Christ character, which I don't get at all. But like, you know, I don't know. I'm reading some of these things.
I completely missed that.
I feel like if Eddie Mannix is anyone, it makes more sense to me that he would be the George Clooney character from Hail Caesar. The Hail Caesar, the movie within the movie, not Hail Caesar, the movie. Oh my God, this is so good.
There's like, because he has a crisis of a crisis of faith, but like Jesus didn't exactly have a crisis of faith, and this is not what the podcast is about, so I'm not going to get into that, but it's like, it's a weird like analogy to make, and then I don't think the Coens nail at all, and like then also the Coens like fold in like, oh, also politics and also this, and it just, whenever we were on the movie sets or on the lot, I was having a great time, and anytime we left it I was bored and confused.
You guys know how I feel about the Coen brothers. I'm not like that into their stuff, but I can always recognize that like they are superior filmmakers. I always look at their movies and I'm like, this is really well done. It's not my thing. This, on the other hand, it's kind of not my thing, but I also don't think it's a very good movie. This to me is just a string of really expensive, great skits with lots of famous people in them. And that's kind of how I sat back, relaxed, and watched it. And I was able to enjoy it for that. But like, dear God, there is no through line in this movie.
You really described it like it's an episode of Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, that is what it feels like. Just a bunch of really elaborate, well-done sketches that are funny in and of themselves, but one does not connect to the other at all. And I think the problem is Josh Brolin's character is definitely like the main character of the movie, whereas I think a lot of the promo material would suggest that
like
George
Clooney
is. If you had taken George Clooney's shit out of the movie, it would have been much better. But what they needed to do with Eddie Mannix, I think, is just do a better job of putting the audience in his shoes and kind of making, because like he's getting a job offer from another company, making the movie about that and his decision about, you know, should I give up this thing that's really tough and that I love, or like support my family and whatnot, and then use him to actually walk you from soundstage to soundstage in a way that you felt like you were moving around in this one place. Whereas it kind of just like, I mean, he did eventually show up almost everywhere, but as it feels while you're watching it, it's almost like he haphazardly pops up everywhere.
Ultimately, he has nothing to do with the resolution of the film itself. Like,
no.
Because the drive is supposed to be finding out where George Clooney's character is and rescuing him. And, like, I got really frustrated that I got really connected to some of these smaller characters. Well, I mean, like, that's the drive, you know? And, like, I got connected to these smaller characters, and the movie forgets them. They just literally get abandoned. Like, oh, where did Scarlett Johansson go? And there's, like, a line of dialogue to explain. Another character you just never see or hear from again. And it's just, like, what are we doing? Because, like, Eddie Mannix to me is not that interesting a character. So following him around as he, like, debates whether or not he wants to take another job, I didn't care.
Oh, see, I loved that. To me, he's someone that I was able to relate to and understand what he was going to, and all these other crazy characters around him. He's, like, the anchor that I needed. And then I could have appreciated everybody else together, like, existing in this one studio together.
I feel like the real problem is that it should have been one or the other. Like I feel like you and Christy are saying different things about what you would have liked to see more or less of, but the real problem, and I agree with you, Perry, as much as I enjoyed this movie, I think what kept me from, like, loving it is, like you said, it feels like a bunch of disjointed things kind of loosely stitched together, and I couldn't figure out what the through line that I was supposed to follow is. So I think it should have been one or the other. They should have either put a heavier focus on Josh Brolin's character, so we're seeing it more from his perspective, or they should have, you know, scaled it back and, like, done the more golden age of Hollywood stuff and kind of downplayed his character and made him just a cog in it as opposed to making him the main character.
Yeah, I mean, like, I get why a lot of our colleagues are so gaga over it, because it's a film nerd movie, but that wasn't enough for me to, like, the Coens, I go back and forth on their comedies a lot. Like, some of them I think are great, and some of them I'm like, I don't ever want to watch again. And, like, I would watch, this is what I would watch on TBS, because I could watch the parts I really like, and then whenever the people from the future show up, that's what they call themselves, they're not from the future.
they're like a crazy person.
But when the future people show up, I would just go make a sandwich because I don't care about that section.
Yeah, that was the weakest section by far.
I do want to ask, like, I feel like so much of what I found appealing about this movie and what a lot of our colleagues have loved so much about it is how heavily it draws upon people's knowledge of the golden age of Hollywood. And I wonder if, like, do you think this movie has any appeal to people that don't know or don't care about the golden age of Hollywood?
No. I don't. It's already got a C-minus cinema score. It had an opening on Friday night that's being considered underwhelming. This isn't a mainstream movie. It's, like I said, it's for movie geeks, and they're trying to sell it based on star power. And I think that the people that go to see it, because they're like, oh, I love George Clooney, I love Scarlett Johansson, are going to be like, the hell? They're only in it for 10 minutes.
What about, like, the poor people who go and see it for Jonah Hill, and they're like, what the fuck?
Who's going to see this?
Whoever sees a movie for Jonah Hill besides Jonah Hill's parents?
Okay, I'm rethinking my idea. You know what I want? I want a movie about someone who is a professional person. That's what I want.
Oh! That's like it.
I want Jonah Hill's character to get his own movie.
I would actually watch that, but I would want it to be played by someone other than Jonah Hill because
that is just such a funny concept to me.
No, that would be funny, actually. Yeah, like, that's interesting. And I feel like you have to see the movie to understand what Perry's talking about. But that's an interesting persona where he's so outside of that. But that's the thing. Like, Mannix isn't really outside of all this hubbub, and he kind of...
He's not outside, but he's not inside either, which could make for a good movie. But I mean, I feel like one of the problems that the movie has is that you don't stick with his viewpoint all the way through. So then you just keep, like, going off into detours where you're seeing other things. And, like, it doesn't all, like, it needed to be neater. It needed to be more streamlined. It needed something stronger to tie it all together.
Yeah. So I think we all agree that we liked it okay, but are we recommending it to people?
I'm not. I would recommend Pride and Prejudice and Zombies over this.
Okay, first of all, no. I would recommend it if you are a big fan of the Coen brothers. I would recommend it if you like the golden age of Hollywood. I would recommend it if you want to see why Alden Ehrenreich should be the next big thing, because he is spectacular. But I feel like, for example, I was going to bring my husband to the screening. He ended up not being able to go. I don't think he would have liked it that much, because he's not someone who cares about the golden age of Hollywood or anything like that. So... I recommend it with reservations. Like, if you're a film nerd, then you'll probably like it. If you're not, it might not be the movie for you.
Yeah, I honestly think unless you really love the golden era, I just don't think there's enough here for you to even enjoy it. Like,
I actually think, since Perry was comparing it to Saturday Night Live, I feel like a mainstream audience could almost enjoy it the way we enjoy Saturday Night Live sketches, where we just see, like, a clip of it on YouTube. Because the best parts of this movie are just, like, little scenes. Like, there are individual scenes in here that I think are flat out brilliant, and I feel like those are worth watching. But I feel like I think that a lot of people can get, so you can definitely get something out of watching the whole thing, but I feel like a lot of people would just have just as good a time watching it in snippets. Oh my god, I feel so bad saying that. I'm like, the Coen brothers made, like, a really, like, you know, they worked so hard and they made a good movie, and I'm saying, guys, it's okay.
That's okay. There are enough critics out there that act like everything the Coens touch is absolute gold. I think we're fine.
Oh god, I hate myself a little for saying that. I'm so sorry, Coen brothers, because I know you're listening.
They do not forgive you. That is a wrap on episode 99 of Popcorn and Prosecco. Thank you guys so much for coming back and listening. We have a lot of good stuff on the way, and one of which is our 100th episode, which is next week. And so to celebrate, we are going to do another live watch. If you watched Winter's Tale with us, that's what we're going to do again this time. We are going to do it with the movie Jupiter Ascending, and it's going to be on Saturday, February 13th at 8 p.m. EST. So tune in, watch that nonsense with us, because it's going to be a ton of fun. And then you could talk to us on Twitter. We have our Twitter handle, Popcorn Prosecco. Go like us on Facebook, please. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, where you can also rate and comment, which is super helpful. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com, and all three of us are all over the internet as well. Angie, do you want to go first?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
Christy?
You can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko. That's KristyPuchko. And I write all over the web, but you can find career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
And you can catch my writing at collider.com, and my Twitter handle is pnemiroff. So thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week.
Cool.
Would that it were so simple.
Would that it were so simple.
Would that it were so simple. Would that it were so simple.